American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with the capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And it is a good day. This is Mike reporting to you from the internet for Sunday, May the 1st, 2016. And you're listening to Newsreel, the WOG Global sit-rep on core political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening in and distributing this program, you are too. You can follow along and check our facts by going to newsreel.ca. That's newsreel.ca. This is a free podcast that can be heard on Rant Radio Talk each and every Sunday afternoon at 1400 hours Pacific Time. We also record live every Thursday night at 1530 hours Pacific Time on Mumble. If you go to the newsreel.ca website, just click on the Participate tab at the top of the page, and there you'll find the instructions for joining us on the Mumble server. And with us tonight are nobody, because Sean's rig is down once again, and this is actually Sunday morning when I'm doing this, so I'm kind of running late on this. I actually kind of ran out of time, so whatever. No one's here! Yay! All by myself. Cue the Celine Dion song. But anyways, so Sean's rig is down this week, so that kind of sucks. Good job, Sean. You bastard. Leave me to do all this work by myself. But it's all cool. I'm not really going to bore you with the details of my week because nothing really happened, as usual. Something did happen. I actually finally got the Flying Monkey UAV number 2 up in the air, actually yesterday morning. And it was going pretty good. I actually flew it for about 13 minutes, I think. Yeah, it was about 13 minutes, according to the video on board. And everything was fine and dandy. I landed it once. It was fine. And I was bringing it in because my wife was practicing her camera shooting skills and whatnot. So she had her camera out there and she was watching me fly this thing. And I was trying to bring it in relatively low for her. Not like, you know, on the ground low, but, you know, a little bit lower so it's, you know, she can see where it was. And there was in the park they have some street lights around the track, I guess. And this one near the corner of the track, because it's a corner, they have the lines running above ground, so from pole to pole, and there was one that's kind of more diagonal than I thought it was, like actually over the track, and I didn't see it, so I kind of came in. Luckily, I was going slow, and I actually pegged it with the one wing. The wing just about, it pulled apart, so that was good. So it reduced a lot of, it could have went through the wing. That would have sucked. So did that anyways. It kind of spun around a few times. It was only like maybe, I don't know, 20, 50, not 50 feet, 20, 25 feet off the ground, I guess, maybe. I don't know how high it was. And anyways, it spun around a few times and hit the ground, landed on its other wing, the opposite wing, and it kind of bent it up and kind of actually cracked the wing. It's all styrofoam, right? So anyway, so I had to fix that. So it's all fixed again. It's got a bit of a upward warp in the right wing now, but I think it's going to fly again, so it's fine. So that's what I did. Other than that, nothing else really happened this week. So I'm just going to get right into the news. And this is going to be a really short episode today. I just don't have the time. Sorry. we'll just blame it on Sean because it just works that way. So let me just bring up my script here because I have no idea where the hell the script even is right now. There we are. Okay, so first news article we have today is in Body Hack News, and that's thanks to Weyandi. And honestly, I don't even have any of my friggin' links up here. Big fail there, Maltos. Good job. All right, so it's, as it's loading, I'll read it. So Google patents electronic device that would be injected into your freaking eyeball. Yeah, so this is the Gizmode article. Insert awesome picture of it looks like Fry getting something stuck in his face. Merging biology with electronics isn't a question of if, but when. Some enterprising biohackers, link here, have even decided that the time is now. Google's parent company, Alphabet, appears to be preparing for our cybernetic future with a new patent for electronics that can be injected into our eye. It says onto your eye here, so I'm just going to go into because it makes more sense. The company has been interested in eyeball tech for a while, most notably with its longtime development of smart contact lenses, linked there, for monitoring diabetes. However, this cringe-inducing tech, I do apologize for the gif above, would actually work to help focus light into the retina, or onto the retina, so I should be saying. The patent specifically covers a method for, quote, injecting a fluid into a lens capsule of an eye, wherein a natural lens of the eye has been removed from the lens capsule, unquote. An intraocular floats in the fluid and conforms to the surface of the eye. It's powered by radio frequency energy, so yeah, you know, same thing as like an RFID, received by a small antenna inside. This tiny eyeball gadget even has its own data storage. And then they say injected into your eyeball, beach, whatever. Okay. We're not really too squeamish about that, because, I mean, come on. Yeah, we're all about that stuff, us wogs. And of course, patents are patents, and we've seen some strange ones, link here for that, that have never come to life beyond crappy black and white sketches. Still, it's notable that injection-based electronics are clearly a future massive companies. Massive companies are beginning to dream up and patent. So that's kind of cool. It sucks that Google's patenting this. I think some other companies should kind of get on the bandwagon with some ideas and stuff and kind of patent them themselves, so we don't have the Google monopoly kind of taking over everything. But again, I'm all for this stuff. I'd like to have stuff in my eyes. It'd be nice to have my vision corrected by this way. Well, I guess I could have laser surgery done too, I suppose. But I'd also like to have some, other stuff going on in there. I'd like to be able to, analyze shit, you know? Come on. Let's get on this, people. But, yeah, that's all for that article. What do you have to say, Sean? Oh, nothing, because you're not here. Okay, awesome. So, into the next article in Power Source News. Thank you to Iron Angel for this one. And he sent this article to us, and he was saying that... something about the credibility of it, where it may... This is the most credible source he's seen about this supposedly happening, or whatever the story is. So, let me just actually read what he says here. There are several sources on this one. It seems legit. This is a short one. That's what he says. There we go. So, yeah. So into it we go. Scientists accidentally create a battery that can outlast your device. Yeah. And this is actually... Okay. I'm reading the wrong date here. Over the last decade or so, it's become increasingly obvious that the limits of battery technology are a pothole on our road to the future. It's not even a new problem. Scientists have been trying to invent better batteries since Edison. There's a link for that there. Whether we're talking about storing clean energy, more practical electric cars, or maybe even just our dozing off phones. Okay. Battery issues are slowly slowing progress way down. They're not powerful enough unless they're uselessly big and seriously pricey. They take a long time to recharge, and for keeping the devices we depend on up and running, they just don't last long enough. Yeah, that's why you, if you're not using the screen, you turn the screen off and all that shit, you know? That is, at least until researchers at the University of California, Irvine, UCI, stumbled across a way to make ridiculously long-lasting rechargeable batteries. They've made a battery that takes 200,000 charge cycles and says, is that all you got? And keeps going. That's 400 times the charges that a lithium battery can handle. They were as surprised as anyone. We started to cycle the devices and then realized that they weren't going to die, admitted chair of UCI's chemistry department, Reginald Penner, in an interview with Popular Science, which is a link to that there. We don't understand the mechanism of that yet. Penner's lab has been experimenting with replacing lithium with gold nanowires. They're thousands of times thinner than a human hair and very conductive, with a large surface area for storing and transferring electrons. The goal was to make a solid-state battery without the liquid lithium batteries contain that makes them overly sensitive to heat and combustion, I guess. Other researchers have experimented with using the nanowires before, but they're fragile. At UCI, PhD candidate Maya Letai got the idea of suspending the brittle nanowire in a protective electrolyte gel after coating them with manganese oxide. Picture there. Manganese shell and gold nanowire. Yay! And it's about maybe 250, 300 nanometers wide, according to that picture. That's pretty damn thin. And boom, super battery. Maya was playing around and she coated this whole thing with a very thin gel layer and started to cycle it, as Penner tells it. She discovered just by using this gel, she could cycle it hundreds of thousands of times without losing any capacity. Rechargeables usually die after about 6,000 to 7,000 charges, so this is amazing. UCI suspects that the gel makes the nanowire more pliable and thus prevents the cracking that ended previous experiments. This could be the kind of battery life breakthrough that we've been waiting for. Here's a young scientist herself telling the story of this amazing leap forward. And there's a whole video of that there. You can click on that. I am not going to watch it right now. But very, very cool indeed. So that'd be really nice to have smaller, thinner, lighter batteries with, you know, a lot better recharge capability and probably even better capacity. Possibly. Well, maybe not. I don't know. But very, very cool. I'd like to get some. Yeah. And now we have into gaming news. Thanks to Gatekeeper for this article here. Steam is now accepting Bitcoin. Yes, everybody has Bitcoin wallets. You can rejoice now. You can go and buy all your games you want with Bitcoin. Yay. This new integration will make Steam more accessible for gamers in countries like India, China, and Brazil, according to the article. Now, even more gamers around the world can experience the wallet-draining effect of a Steam sale, even those without a credit card. That's because you can now pay for items on Steam via the virtual currency Bitcoin. Payment processor BitPay on Wednesday announced a new integration, noting that it will make Steam more accessible for gamers in emerging gaming countries or markets in countries like India, China, Brazil. While more users are coming online in these countries, traditional payment options like credit cards often are not available. BitPay Director of Business Development Rory Desmond wrote in a blog post, which is right here, click on the link for that. As the internet's universal currency, Bitcoin will allow Steam to easily reach gamers in every market around the world without the high fees or the risk of chargeback fraud that come with card payments. Thanks to this new integration, gamers will be able to use any Bitcoin wallet to pay for items on Steam without having to provide sensitive financial information. BitPay said that it hopes to bring the same functionality to additional gaming platforms in the future. Bitcoin has a bright future in gaming, Desmond wrote. For the uninitiated, Valve's Steam platform, founded in 1996, is currently used by more than 89 million gamers in 237 countries. The platform boasts more than 9,000 games. A number of tech companies have embraced Bitcoin payments as of late, including Newegg, Dell, and Microsoft. So that's very cool. Way of the future, folks. Yeah. So that's, gonna close that there. And in the last article we have today, thanks again to Gatekeeper for this one, in political trolling news. This is actually pretty cool. In a really shitty way, though, of course. Clinton's internet supporters, allegedly using pornography, shut down Bernie Sanders' largest Facebook groups in coordinated attack. The story has been updated. So I'll read through the thing and I'll go through the updates at the bottom. It's at the bottom anyway, so. Last week, Correct Record, or CTR, David Brock's super PAC that coordinates with Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign, announced that it was spending $1 million on social media in an effort to combat Bernie Sanders' online dominance. How specifically? By paying trolls. Last night, on the eve of five Democratic primary elections, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Delaware, Pennsylvania, and Maryland, we may have seen this paid army in action. Several notable Bernie Sanders Facebook groups were taken down following a coordinated cyber attack by Clinton supporters, in which a number of users reported content on the pages simultaneously. According to US Uncut, Facebook's automated systems take note of how many individuals report a particular post, and if the post is reported enough, it will be taken down. The same process applies to groups, pages, and individual user accounts. The groups affected by the attack include, but are not limited to, the following. There's a list here. So Bernie Sanders activists, there's 40,000 members. Bernie Sanders is my hero, 60,000 members. Bernie or bust, 16,000. Bernie Sanders, ideas welcome, 33,000. Bernie Sanders for president, 2016, 117,000 members. Bernie Sanders revolutionaries and Bay Area for Bernie. Yeah, okay, anyways. Thus far, there is limited evidence for which group or groups were behind these attacks. And we'll update this page as more information comes in. See the bottom, blah, 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 blah. See the bottom of the page for updates, which I'm going to get into. Stop telling me that page. Holy crap. The Facebook purge did not last long, perhaps long enough to prevent the spread of anti-Clinton information in key hours of the evening before the primaries, but it coincided with the Things Bernie Hates hashtag trending on Twitter, which was quickly co-opted by Bernie's grassroots online movement. Needless to say, Sanders supporters were outraged. The Reddit group, Sanders for President, became a central hub during the downtime. There and elsewhere, many angry users exchanged theories, links for that there, that this was the work of CTR's paid trolls who had spammed the groups, posting inappropriate pornographic materials, link for that there, only to then report the material to Facebook. So these guys, these trolls, have gone on. They've posted porn on the Bernie Sanders pages, groups or whatever, and then not only did they post it, they just went in and they said, oh yeah, there's porn on this site, what are you doing here? Da-da-da-da. Inappropriate content, whatever, report it, enough people report it, page gets some shit. Sorry. Weird, a lot of noise. I'm gonna close this thing here. Picking up a lot of noise from somewhere. I don't know if it's outside or inside or what, so that's kind of weird. But anyways, shame on Hillary Clinton and HFA. We'll never support her. We are... Yeah, Bernie or Boss, Bernie Black, whatever the hell. It's just bullshit there. Yeah, so this is kind of got a whole bunch of like quotes and shit all over the place here. So I'm just kind of trying to run around them here. According to US Uncut, there were even allegations of child porn being circulated and posted by the Clinton trolls. Erica Liebenau, a Sanders supporter and member of one of the pro-Bernie groups, said that we had what looked like a kiddie porn posted in one of our groups today. I reported that one. Seriously made me want to vomit. Yeah. Because, you know, child porn is bad. Okay. Sounds like somebody's, like, you know, mixing stuff up for a bomb or something somewhere. A Facebook post by Casey Champagne, whose secondary name on his profile was listed as Casey Max Charbonneau, pictured below with Hillary Clinton, and whose Facebook likes included Correct the Record, so that's CTR. And Barrier Breakers 2016, that's Brock's recently launched online operation, confirmed that Clinton trolls were behind the attack when he bragged in the Facebook group Bros for Hillary. Yeah, okay. Then he managed to get one of the groups banned for containing credible threat of violence. And for some reason my pictures did not load, so I'm going to try to reload this page here real quick. There we go. Okay. The group you reported, pictures of stuff. I guess he took screenshots of it. That user's profile has since been deleted, link there for that, but the comments on his post seem to confirm that this tactic is nothing new for Clinton's online supporters. So yeah, there's a whole bunch of friggin' screenshots of conversations from Facebook, which I'm not gonna go through because fuck that. I got away from Facebook for a reason, right? It should be noted that there's nothing officially linking Brock's Barrier Breakers to the Facebook attacks, and beyond the post on Bros for Hillary, which has itself been shut down in response, there's no clear evidence who was behind the coordinated attacks. But let's say, for argument's sake, that this purge was a move by David Brock to silence Hillary Clinton's online opposition during the crucial evening hours before five primary contests and prevent a contested convention. Let's also say it was calculated to generate disproportionate backlash to feed the narrative that Bernie's online supporters are bullies and aggressive. Does this really make sense? Such a tactic would be unlikely to win the hearts of any Sanders supporters who Hillary Clinton will need in a general election. Even the perception amongst Bernie's progressives that this was a pilot by Brock will, in all probability, push many into the growing Bernie or Bust movement. These fed-up voters now represent a large enough slice of the Democratic base to cost Clinton victory in a close race. And 2016 promises to be close. Clinton, whose favorability ratings continue to tank, is only up on average by 8.5 points over Republican front-runner Donald Trump, the Trump-nado, according to Real Clear Politics. A recent poll saw that number shrink to 3. Hillary Clinton's camp might not feel it needs Bernie's progressives, but it absolutely does. Though there is plenty of circumstantial evidence, logically speaking, the negatives of the scenario seem to outweigh the benefits. That said, even if last night had nothing to do, sorry, had anything to do, or nothing, yeah, whatever. If Even if last night had nothing to do with David Brock, Correct the Record, or Hillary Clinton's campaign, it was still supporters of the former Secretary of State who carried out the assault. Such an affront to the free sharing of information on the internet is indicative of an increasingly hostile Clinton camp that has for too long gotten a pass by a mainstream media fixated on Bernie Bros, Bernie Brothers, whatever. This incident marks the first time in this Democratic primary where these tactics have been used and puts the lie to the idea that the dirtiest players online are Sanders supporters. In fact, it is the single largest online attack by supporters of one Democratic candidate against supporters of the other in 2016, you know, so far. If she wants to have any chance in November, should she secure the nomination, Hillary Clinton should at least consider denouncing these strategies and should do everything to rein in her most extreme supporters, who are doing her no favors by carrying out a war with Sanders supporters online at a time when the primary race has all but been decided. Furthermore, the precedent this sets should frighten everyone who values free speech in America. And if it turns out that Brock really is behind the attack, Clinton should promptly abandon him as an ally. In fact, she should do that anyways. These tactics have no place on the left. Anyways, update number one. Bros for Hillary issued a statement disavowing Casey Charbonneau, while Correct the Record has denied any involvement. Okay. Update number two. Facebook has issued a statement saying that a number of groups were inaccessible for a brief period after one of our automated policies was applied incorrectly. That's a quote from them. The Daily Beast claims, citing a Facebook source, that thousands of groups were affected. There are no specifics about what exactly those bots were responding to. We've reached out to Facebook and will update again and when and if they respond. And update number three, a Facebook spokesman told us that they weren't clear on the exact technical details of what transpired to take the Sanders groups down, and that they couldn't discount that the disabling of the groups may have been triggered by a higher volume of users reporting inappropriate content. Right, so everyone's just pretty much covering their asses here. They did something. They threw something up on a page. You know, a few of them, whatever. Others came in and said, hey, there's a point on your page. It's reported. All these posts are reported. Page gets shut down. That's what it is. This is what happens when you automate shit, okay? So, really, shitty thing for people to be doing. I mean, if you don't like the person, don't vote for the person. You know, that's, you know, if you think other people shouldn't vote for a certain candidate or whatever, then go out and talk to people. And if there's something wrong, if you know there's something wrong, or you think there's something wrong, go and talk to people, like on the street or in a debate or something like that, somewhere, and try to sway their opinion. You know, do it properly. Don't, you know, throw in lies or anything like that. Say, well, I heard about this here. Okay, maybe the guy knows, well, yeah, he did that, but he did it for this reason. This might be information that you don't have, right? Doesn't mean that you, because you know some things, doesn't mean you have can see the big picture, right? So, there's always something somewhere that you might not have heard. So, you do not, if somebody has an opinion or whatever, you do not freaking stomp all over that shit. You do not, you know, like that, because we know where I'm going with this, right? It's kind of like freedom of speech. Yeah, like, to an extent, I suppose. But it's, you're shutting a guy down for, anyways, whatever. I'm not going to get into that. My brain's just going to go explode all over the place here. So, not happening. Yeah. So, don't be buddy fuckers, pretty much. So, yeah. Anyways, Interrec Media. We have two things. Both of them are from Gatekeeper today. First one is Vector 1.0. That's VEKTOR 1.0. This is a game for Android. Let me see here. Vector, the Courier. In this free-to-play action game, you assume the role... of the Courier, a wet-wired courier whose mission is to deliver top-secret data to aid the fight against a corrupt corporate government. I don't know what the hell that word is. It looks like it's stretching, but it's missing a T. While going down the endless highway, you battle against the corporate mercenaries who would not hesitate to use any means necessary to prevent you from delivering the package. So, I checked it out. It's actually pretty cool. There's a video and stuff on that. And the other thing we have here is the Chernobyl virtual reality tour, and there's a video of that, a little preview video. This VR tour of Chernobyl eerily compares scenes before and after the fallout. Apparently this Tuesday marks the 30th anniversary of the Chernobyl disaster, which remains one of the worst, the worst nuclear accident in history. We all know the details behind that. So definitely take a look at that. It's very, very cool. And yeah, so again, this is a very, very short episode. So in saying such, that's all we have for you this week. But don't worry, we'll be back again next week to make sure that you get the news that you need to survive. This has been a free transmission brought to you by the Wogs Who Care. Please distribute this media in any way that you can. A special thanks goes out to Yugo Saki for hosting the episodes, Kevin is a Geek, for our use of this Murmur server, which we're not on right now. But anyways, thanks, Kevin is a Geek, and the Army of the Flying Monkeys for their assistance in gathering data. If you have any information you'd like to send us, you can reach us at info@newsreel.ca or by clicking on the Contact Us tab on newsreel.ca. If you like the music in the background, please be sure to check out I Really Don't Know. I'm just going to slap something in there. You'll see it on the post. I'm sorry. And actually, we're going to fade out with a song, with a track. Oh, crap. How did it go? There we go, with a track by Daft Punk called Television Rules the Nation. And until next time, that's what server said. End of line. Television rules the nation. Television rules the nation. Television rules the nation. Television rules the nation.